I'm Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Good Glow podcast. Throughout my treatment for breast cancer, I've realised the importance of self-care. Whether that's a 5K run, a checkup with your GP, or even a 5-minute dip in the sea, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. This season, I've teamed up with Spotlight Oral Care. I know how important oral care is to our overall health and how we really need to look after our teeth and gums by using the best products. I've been using the Spotlight Oral Care Sonic Toothbrush and I love that it gives me that dentist clean feeling and is much more effective than a manual brush and less abrasive. Use the discount code GOODGLOW25 on spotlightoralcare.com to get 25% off the entire range. Why not pick up some perfect stocking fillers this Christmas and get them delivered straight to your front door? This week on the Good Glow podcast, I speak to Rosanna Ruan, also known as Saoirse and Mama on Instagram. Rosanna and her daughter Saoirse captured the nation's heart when they appeared on the Late Late Toy Show this year. After being diagnosed with cancer when she was just 7 years old, Saoirse and her family have been on a very difficult journey over the past year. Not only having to endure 9 months of chemotherapy, Saoirse had to have her leg amputated, which was a devastating blow for them all. It's still very raw, but today Rosanna bravely tells me about what they've been through. She shares her story too, things about her life that she's never publicly discussed before. She tells me her husband Ollie was diagnosed with cancer when he was 30 and how they tried for years to conceive their second daughter, Farah Rose, who is turning 2 in January. I thought long and hard about who should be my last guest of 2020. What a year we've had. I knew it had to be someone really special and someone who can help us appreciate the simple yet beautiful moments. Someone who can show us that even in the darkest moments of life, that we can somehow get through it until the light shines again. Cancer didn't take Saoirse's love of life and her beautiful personality. Rosanna tells me how much of a boost the toy show gave them, why they decided to give so much of the money raised for Saoirse back to the charities that supported them, and how after a very painful year, that music has found its way back into their lives. I wanted to dedicate this episode to our frontline workers who have done so much for us this year. In particular, all of the amazing doctors and nurses out there who are still facing this pandemic head on. And a special thank you to Saoirse's amazing team, Dr. John Kilrain, Dr. Fintan Shannon, Dr. Michael Capra and Dr. Alan Malloy. And I have a special message for you, the listener, at the end of this episode. Rosanna, welcome to the Good Glow podcast.
Thank you.
I have to say, and I know I explained this to you on the phone last week, but I really thought the last episode of 2020 had to be a really special one. And I'm incredibly honoured to listen to your story today. And thank you for your time. And I can't wait to hear everything that you've overcome. And I've been following you over the last couple of weeks. And I just think you're inspirational.
Thank you so much. The honour is all mine. I'm just delighted to be here, to be doing a podcast after, as you said, such an incredible and difficult year. And I feel like it's a nice way to come out of 2020.
Let's start with the Late Late, the toy show. I think the whole nation fell in love with Saoirse that night, if they hadn't come across her before. How did you feel standing side of stage, watching, listening, and being in that moment? What was it like?
Oh, a mix, a real big mix of emotions. In a way, I feel it was like 365 days of the year had all come together at that moment in time. And I was an absolute mess. I was standing there looking at my daughter sitting across from Ryan Tubridy, and I was so proud, just beaming that there's my little girl and look at all she's come through and look at this where she is tonight. And you know how big of a reward this is to her for what she's been through. It's very hard to describe, but I was absolutely, you know, it was just so emotional, really emotional.
And you spoke to me a few minutes ago about how Ollie was obviously in the hotel room with your other daughter, Farrah Rose. So it was just the two of you. Was that very special for you to just have that time with her?
Yeah, and I suppose in a way, like, we've been there as a family of four for the whole year. Mm-hmm. You know, with COVID and that, we haven't really had been able to have anyone else kind of help us out or support us. They've been there, but outside the four walls of the house. And I think I've kind of, I suppose I've done a lot with Saoirse. I've done all her chemos with her, and Dad then is trying to keep it going at home and work from home and mind Farrah Rose. And so I think it's kind of a given when these things come up, he's happy to take a back seat, and I kind of, you know, would go with her. But yeah, I was, you know, they kind of took her off into the set, and you know, I was just standing back watching her on a monitor, and she kind of looks at me for that reassurance glance. And you know, that happened a few times during the year. Mm-hmm. It's so important. And I was just kind of giving her that, you'll be fine, you've got this, this is going to be probably one of the most amazing nights of your life. And she was just brought off into the distance, and I think I probably started crying there and then, and that was it.
Wow. You were obviously extremely well minded. Ryan Tuberty is amazing with people, and especially I think with children. So I suppose you had every ounce of you believed and trusted him that he would take good care of her out there.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, the programme that it was, the toy show, I mean, it's amazing, and Ryan Tuberty is so suited to that job, and he's a real kids person. And we know for a fact that if there was no COVID, I suppose maybe, you know, we wouldn't have even been there. It's just the way it all worked out. But, you know, the one thing we didn't get on the night that we would have loved was the hug from Ryan, because he's a hugger and we're huggers. And it was, that urge was there, but we had to hold back. So, yeah, I think he's amazing, you know, and he's been very good to her, because he did speak to her during the year on her journey. And he's just been a great support to her.
Tell us a little bit about Saoirse. What's her personality like? And yeah, obviously we'll get into everything that happened last year. But first, I just want to hear about her and the person that she is.
Saoirse is, oh gosh, let me see. So she's, well, the first thing I would say is she's the most affectionate child I've ever met. Like, she's going to be 9 in January, and she's still huge into the kisses and the hugs, the reassurance, the cuddles. Yeah, and that's lovely, because, you know, that doesn't last forever. And I hope it does last as long as it can. She's just very affectionate. She's very happy-go-lucky. I think she's probably matured a little bit this year, more than your average 8-year-old. But she loves to sing. She loves, like, you know, before all of this happened, she would have been, you know, on the floor doing her breakdancing, very musical, very theatrical, you know, was in drama, played the harp, you know, she played camogie, school-going child, very happy, very healthy, and not a care in the world.
And that's how you want them to be.
Yeah.
Before your gorgeous girls arrived, you've been to hell and back before, and you have never spoken about this. And I was shocked when you told me what had happened to Ollie before you got married.
Mm-hmm. So I met Ollie in 2006, and I suppose we just, you know, we had a great relationship. We clicked. 20 months in, he proposed, and I didn't have to think about it. He'd asked my dad's permission, and I knew, like, once I had their support, I was on to a good thing. And then we were only a few months engaged. We got engaged in December 07. And in April 2008, he started complaining about just a bit of a discomfort and not feeling right, and went to the doctor, as you do. And he was put on 2 weeks antibiotics. And a week in, he said, this still isn't right. So we had met on the 17th of April 2006, and this was the 17th of April 2008, and we were going for dinner to celebrate that, you know, we were 2 years together and that we were a year away from our wedding. We planned to get married on the 17th of April 09. we were getting ready to go for dinner, and we just said we'd take a quick spin into the Galway Clinic A&E. And we did that, and we met this lovely consultant, and he, you know, ran a few tests, and he came back, and we just knew by him, whatever way he looked at Ollie, we just knew it was bad news. And he just confirmed our worst fears, and he told Ollie that he had testicular cancer. And it was, I mean, it's so long ago now, that's 12 years, but at the time it was, our lives were over, I felt. I mean, I didn't know too much about cancer at the time, but I knew it wasn't good. The consultant's words to us was, you don't let the sun go down twice on testicular cancer. Go home, tell your family, pack a bag, come back in, and you'll be having surgery in the morning. And I just remember things like, I was insisting that I would drive home, and he was like, no, I'm fine to drive home. And, you know, I was like, God, what's going through his head? And he was 30, I was 29. We were to have our whole lives ahead of us. We were getting married. I was like, I've only just met this amazing person who I want to spend the rest of my life with. And I felt like, I felt like he was going to be taken away from me. That the one good thing I had in my life was going to be taken. There was just a complete shock and numbness, you know, where you can't speak and life is going on around you. And telling his family was so hard, and telling my parents over the phone. And even then I rang a few close friends, I remember, the following day from the hospital while he was in surgery. And even to make those phone calls at the time, it was so hard. It was so hard to speak to people and say, this is what's happening. So I remember he had his surgery, and I was allowed to stay in the room and sleep on the couch for 5 of the 6 nights, I think. I remember one of the staff used to come in and say, you're grand again to stay tonight, but you know, like, we have to do a count of heads in case, you know, an alarm goes off or whatever. So I was kind of winging it by staying every night, but I didn't want to be anywhere else. That's all I remember. I didn't want to be anywhere else, only by his side. And I do remember that I was absolutely heartbroken, and I was, I suppose, so negative. I just didn't know where this was going to go. I was just imagining the worst. But Ollie himself was so positive the whole time, and he kept me going. But of course, I went through the motions, and, you know, and I still was so upset and worried. And that, I don't think that ever leaves you, because even to this day, if he has a twinge or an ache or a pain, anyone else would be like, it'll be grand. But I'm like, maybe you should get it checked out. So we were to get married in April of 2009. And because, I suppose, the treatment, you know, he had to have the surgery, and then about 6 weeks later, he was brought in and he had to stay there for his chemo. And he lost his hair and, you know, the usual side effects. So we decided, like, let's push out the wedding by 6 months and give him a chance to kind of, you know, get back to himself and have some hair on the day of the wedding, if that's what he wanted. And we got married then in October of 2009, and we had the big day. You know, life was good. Ollie was having his yearly checkups. He was working over in America a bit. For my first anniversary, I flew over to him in Providence. That was amazing. I love America anyway. And I'd be saying, couldn't we live in America? And he'd be saying, you're here on holiday now. It's not the same if you live here. He'd have to bring me back down to earth. So, of course, you know, we said, you know, the 2 years married, and would we start a family? And we didn't really know what was going to happen. So, we were lucky that we fell pregnant with Saoirse. And we had Saoirse in January of 2012. Oh, stop. I just remember thinking, she was, you know, amazing. This little person that I had to mind now for the rest of my life. Like, I remember my dad and my mom coming in to visit us the night after I had her, or that night. And I remember saying to my dad, I was so emotional. And I said to him, how do you love all of us? My mom and dad had 5 girls. It's like, how do you love all of us? Like, I just have this one little thing here, and I mean, I can't imagine loving anyone else. How did you share it out? And he was like, ah, sure, now, you know, we had to, and we did, and it was lovely. And, you know, we brought her home, and we started off life as a family of three, and it was lovely. I instantly wanted another baby. I was like, oh yeah, I'd so want to do this again. And I think that's kind of where the start of our fertility issues came into play. After a few months, you know, giving myself time to get back to myself and whatever, and realizing this isn't happening naturally, went to the GP. We were referred to the Galway Fertility Clinic to Dr. Una Conway, and our fertility journey began. We did three IUIs and we failed each one of them. I remember Ollie was actually in America for one of those, and it was incredibly difficult. You know, I remember sitting down with Una Conway at the time, and she was saying, like, you know, there's nothing like in textbook wrong here. You know, you're just, you know, she said, I do think if you go down the IVF route, it'll work for you. We just gave it a break for a while, decided what will we do next. And someone had said to me, oh, did you try Napro? Now, I've never spoken about any of this. Even when my family hear this podcast, they'll be hearing this for the first time. We decided to go down the Napro route, which is like, it's like having loads of homework to do. You know, I had to go in and meet with this nurse, and she teaches you how to log everything, because everything is so important, from your temperature to everything. And we did that for a few months. And I remember our consultations with the doctor or our reviews, he'd say, yeah, you're ticking along nicely. And now we just need to get you to this point. And nothing was happening. So by then, I think, you know, we knew, like, there's something seriously wrong here. But it wasn't either with Ollie and it wasn't either with me. It was, I don't know if you ever heard of secondary fertility. And that's what we kind of classed it as, you know. But it was all about, I suppose, it would happen, and, you know, but would it? So that was the Napro. And then we decided, this isn't working, let's give this a break. And this is all money. This is all money that you're throwing at something, and when it doesn't work out, you still have the bills. You know, you still have the loans to pay. So it's heartbreaking. It really is heartbreaking. So we just decided to go down the route of RePromed this time, which are in Dublin. So we started that journey probably July of 2017. And yeah, there was an awful lot of, you know, tests and bloods and getting the paperwork together and meetings in Dublin, and it was a lot of big sacrifices. So we decided to go down the ICSI route, which is, it's not your IVF, but it's basically where, you know, everything is put together, and then it's, you know, they do an extraction from me, and then they put it all back in and hope for the best. So we did the extraction, I remember, in November of 2017, and they were like, we'll let you know how we get on. And sure, I developed this infection called hyper ovarian stimulation, I think, if I can remember it properly. And basically it was game over for this round, and, you know, it's not going to happen until we go again, and we'll do, you know, another extraction in the new year, but for now you need to rest and just forget about it now and enjoy your Christmas. And I remember coming home from Dublin that day, because we'd invested so much, I'd taken so much time off work. It was a very private journey. My boss was the only one that knew about it, and she was so supportive to me. And I remember coming home from Dublin in the car thinking, it was like I'd left something behind. And I was, again, this heartbreak. No one knows you're on this journey, and it's just the two of you. But over time, over the next few weeks, I got past it, and I said, look, it's our first Christmas in the house. We'll enjoy it, you know, we'll let the hair down. We'll have a great Christmas. And we did. And in January 2018, I found out I was pregnant. And I was like, oh, we can't believe these testicles shot. I can't get pregnant, so this can't be right. So who's pulling strings here? Who's messing with my head? And I remember going in for the early scan at 8 weeks, and yeah, you know, there was a heartbeat and it was amazing. And then, of course, there was a little bit of spotting, and 2 weeks later I was back in for a scan and it was all over.
Oh my God.
So we had a loss, and yeah, that was, I couldn't even speak. I was just shaking on the table. I didn't want to hear that they were saying there's no heartbeat. And I remember just Ollie was just holding me and I was just shaking. I think I took about a month off work. And I said, right, look, I need to get back. I'm going to need time off again because we're not finished here. I was just so determined. It's like, let's finish what we started. And I remember getting advice from my GP, and they were like, maybe if you give yourself another few months, it'll happen for you naturally. But the consultant I was under for the miscarriage had said to me, you've done all your work in Dublin now, go back and finish that off. And I did. And then, you know, we did our first implantation, and it was like, you know, you just go away now and we'll contact you. And it was like waiting for, oh God, the wait and the agony. We were so lucky. Because we were, you know, we had success then. We fell pregnant with Pharaohs. And the dates that I mentioned to you, I met Ollie on the 17th of April. And we were to get married on the 17th of April, 09. And Saoirse was conceived on the 17th of April. And Pharaohs was conceived on the 17th of April. And
oh
the
my
reason...
God.
With Pharaohs, they had said to us, well, these are the dates that you can do the, you know, the implantation. And when they said it could be the 16th or it could be the 17th of April, we let you know. I was just quietly sitting there going, oh my God, if it's the 17th of April, how mad is that? And then it was the 17th of April. And I was like, God, nothing can go wrong now.
Yeah. The universe had your back at this point.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So Pharaohs then... came along, a beautiful name. You must have been just so grateful to have these two gorgeous girls in your life now.
Yeah. Pharaohs came along on New Year's Day of 2019. It was the best start to a year. She brought so much joy. You know, there was a 7-year gap between her and Saoirse. And like, it's lovely now to see them, you know, they've a great bond, and I just wanted, you know, them to have each other, and I wanted Saoirse to have someone as well. So yeah, it was a great start to the year. She's amazing. She's, you know, she's hitting for 2 now on the 1st of January, and she was out before, as they say. She definitely, you know, she knows what she's at. She's well able to play us. It was, you know, she was born and... I suppose I was 39 at the time, and I was saying, oh God, I'm going to enjoy my maternity leave now with her like I did with Saoirse, but it was a bit different. Pharaohs was dairy intolerant, and it took us a few months to figure it out. So she was very unsettled. And then a transfer in my work, I worked with the HSE, a transfer opportunity came up, and I thought about it and I figured this will probably be the right move for me with a small baby. So I took the transfer and I went back after my maternity leave. I started this new job. You know, I was only there 12 weeks and I loved it. I loved the people and everything. And I was only there 12 weeks when Saoirse started complaining with this pain in her ankle. And the way Saoirse described it was, you know, she came home one day and she said, oh, the tennis coach said to rest my foot and put some ice on it. And we were like, oh, she's very dramatic, isn't she? And it seemed fine, a little swollen, but we were like, you know, I suppose looking back, you know, she was doing a lot of limping and we were like, is it really that sore? We were heading into the weekend, the Friday of the toy show, and that morning I said, you know what, I'm going to bring her into the doctor now before it gets too busy. I'll pop her uniform on her and I'll land her into school after her doctor's visit. We were there with the GP and he examined Saoirse and he said to me, gosh, her leg feels warm. Feel that there, Mum. And I put my hand on her leg and I said, yeah, it's kind of hot. So he said, okay, I'm going to have to send her for an X-ray. You might come back to me and let me know how you get on. and said, okay, and I was still trying not to read, and I was kind of like, oh, she's broken a bone here now, oh my God, this is so bad, like, I'd never broken anything. So she was like, oh, I wonder what's going to happen. And we were like, don't worry about it, you know, Dad is with you and you'll be fine. So I continued to finish off the tree because we were going to watch The Late Late that night. And the next thing, a photo message comes in about 2 hours later, and it's a picture of Saoirse on crutches with a bandage on her leg, and she was sobbing. And I was like, oh my God, she broke it. I just rang him and I was like, what's going on, what's going on? He was like, hold on now, I'm just leaving the hospital. And he said, yeah, she's broken bone. She was very upset because, you know, she never had crutches before, and she had to kind of master them. And, you know, Ollie said to me, you have to bring her back in on Monday to Merlin to get a permanent cast on. I was like, oh my God. And we sat down that night and we were watching the toy show, and I couldn't take my eyes off her. I was like, I felt so bad. I felt this guilt for just that, you know, that maybe that I didn't get her in quicker, but you know, we did kind of work fast with it. We just didn't really think it was going to be anything like a broken bone. And the following day, there was a gentleman in our house doing some work, and we knew him, he was a friend, and we were chatting away to him, and we were telling him, and he said, sure, look, it, thank God, he said, it could have been worse. And we were like, exactly. We couldn't really do much over the weekend. She was on the crutches, and we said we'd go to Mass on Sunday morning. And the phone rang, and it was this girl ringing from the orthopedics team. And she said, we're just reviewing scans and x-rays, and we're just looking at Saoirse's, and we're just not happy with it. And we're just wondering, would you come in? We'd like to just rule out a few abnormalities. I think that was the first time that I thought, whoa, abnormalities, you know. And then she said something about, yeah, there's a little bit of a shadow here on the x-ray. And I was like, shadow, oh my God, shadow, shadow. But she was like, but just come in, because we just want to rule things out. And I said, oh, okay. And I said, well, like, would she have to stay? And she said, just pack an overnight bag, you mightn't have to stay. So then you're going around and you're trying to talk to Ollie behind Saoirse's back in private so that she won't get startled or upset. And then we have to kind of let her know, oh, we have to go into the hospital, but it's okay, because she just goes from 0 to 100 with anything like that. You know, it's the fear. And it's to just break it to her gently. And we just said, oh, we're just going in because they want to just do another x-ray or whatever, you know. So we jumped into the car and off we went. No one knew. And we were there for a good part of the day. We were there for about 6 hours, I'd say. And they said then, towards 6 o'clock, we're going to give Saoirse an MRI scan, but it won't be until the morning. So we're going to admit her to St. Bernadette's tonight. And I was kind of like, oh, okay, right, okay. God, no answers today. And I just said to the nurse, will we see the consultant? And she said, oh, not this time of the evening. She said, you'll see the consultant tomorrow. And I was a bit deflated. I was like, oh, just wanted someone to tell me what they think that's going on, you know. So we were walking up to the ward, the four of us, and the porter that was pushing Saoirse in the wheelchair. And then we came onto the corridor, and just on the corridor, 6 o'clock in the evening, this girl turns around to me and she said, hi, I spoke to you earlier. I was the one that rang you. And she shook my hand and she said she was from the orthopaedic team. And I was like, oh, hi. And then just a second later, this gentleman turned around and he said, hello, I'm Mr. Fintan Shannon. I'm the orthopaedic surgeon. What are they doing here this late at night? Isn't this very weird? And how they're speaking to us already, and we've just landed on the corridor. We haven't even been brought into a room. I was like, God, I don't like this. And he brought us into a room, and there was like 4 or 5 members of staff there. And Saoirse was on a bed and he was chatting away. And he was like, well, Saoirse, what have you been up to? Can I have a look at your leg? Very nice. He was a lovely, lovely man. He said, do you remember hurting your leg? Do you remember falling? Did you get a belt of camogie? And at this stage, I'd started to feed Pharaoh's a bottle. And, you know, he was just lovely. He was really nice. And he just said in a lovely way, Mum and Dad, we might go up to my office and we'll have a chat. My girls will look after your girls. And I just looked at Saoirse. And the nurse took Farrow's and the bottle. And Saoirse just kind of said, you know, that reassurance glance. And she was like, okay, Mama. And Ollie was just like, we're just doing what we're told. You know, he was just like, okay, I'll leave my jacket down. And we followed them up the corridor. There was the doctor and there was two members of staff. And something just came over me before we went in the door. And I caught Ollie by the pocket of his back jeans and I pulled him back. I started to get this overwhelming fear that I didn't want to this to go any further.
Yeah.
And he stopped and then he kept walking because they were kind of expecting us, you know, to come in behind them. And then I did it again. And then I started to get really, really upset. Oh God, what's going to go down here now? What are they going to tell us? Jeez, this is weird. This is like watching something on the telly. And he sat across from us and I just, like, my mouth went dry. I was just staring at him, waiting for him, willing for him to just tell me what was going on. And we, myself and Ollie, were holding hands. And he just explained about the test they ran that day and what they were looking at. And then he said, it's either an infection or a tumour. And we were like, a tumour? And I was like, a tumour? A tumour's cancerous. This is all going through my head. What's a tumour? A tumour means cancer. Oh my God. An infection faded into the background. I mean, I just couldn't think. You know, it was the worst for me. And this nurse said, now whatever you do, don't go home and Google. And I was like, oh God, that I'll definitely do that. I'll definitely Google. She's like, don't, because you read all kinds of things and it doesn't always be right. And, you know, go home now tonight and rest. And I think the plan of action was, instead of keeping Saoirse for the night, they were going to let us bring her home and we'd come back in the following morning for an MRI. Now, we still knew nothing at this stage, so we couldn't say anything to anyone. So we went home that night and I don't remember the journey home. I just remember when we were at home, you know, it was all niceties and pleasantries for Saoirse, but yet we weren't able to talk. Like, there was this numb. I went down to the bedroom to Ollie and he was so upset and I was like, it's okay. You know, it's going to be okay. I was like, I was so holding it together. I was like, it's going to be fine. He was like, no, I don't think so. And I was like, no, it's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. It's like, let's get the MRI done and then we'll see. So we went into Goy the next morning and she went in for the MRI. And it took a while because she was very scared. And, you know, you go into a machine and it's loud and it's noisy. And I had gone in with her, but it wasn't working out. So we had swapped. Ollie stepped in and I stepped out. And when I stepped out, someone came up and tapped me on the shoulder and it was Dr. Fenton Shannon. And he just said, I'm coming down to check on you. How are you doing? I was like, yeah, I was just having the MRI now, sure, I suppose. And, you know, and he said, you need to go to Dublin tonight. She's going to have her biopsy tomorrow. Have you got somewhere to stay? And I was like, sure, we'll sort something. And he was like, yeah, it's best that you go up tonight. You know, she had the MRI. We went home, we packed and we packed the bags and we headed up to the Red Cow. And, you know, Saoirse loved that. Saoirse loves going away for a night. So she loved the fact that we were going to a hotel and we were going to have a nice meal and she was going to get a big bed. But there was this unknown. I didn't know what Ollie was thinking and he didn't know what I was thinking. And I'd cry and he'd console me and maybe he'd get upset and I'd console him. And it was all had to be fine then for Saoirse. The journey up to Dublin was, we didn't know what we were facing into. So she went in and to Crumlin and, you know, we landed. You know, she had to go through admissions. And I remember standing inside the door. I'd never been to a children's hospital before. I'd never been to Crumlin. And I stood inside the door at reception and it was Christmas time and there was all these people and there was like ambulances outside and it was just busy. And I thought my feet were going to go from under me. I just wasn't able for it. I just thought, jeez, what are we doing here? What, you know, why? why are we here for a biopsy?
You just feel like you've no right to be there. Like, what? Why are we here?
Yeah, or it's kind of like, this isn't the way I wrote it in my life. This was not part of my life.
And also, you've been through enough.
Yeah. Yeah, like, she can't have cancer because her dad had cancer. So we've ticked that box. Isn't that enough for anyone, you know? So we just told her that they just wanted to have a look at her leg. She didn't realise, like, the, you know, the detail of the biopsy. And in fairness, it was, you know, she went down to theatre and she had it. She came back and she was on great pain relief and her leg was bandaged up. And we just said it was an X-ray. You know, we were trying to protect her from everything, I suppose, all the time. And before we left Galway, we were told, you won't get the results of your biopsy on the day. You'll be waiting now about a week or... But, like, she came back from her biopsy and the doctor came up to us and said, called us out of the room on the corridor and just said, you know, so we've ruled out, you know, that went well and we'll have the results in a few days. But he said something like, we've ruled out infection. And that was it. And I was standing there going, but if you've ruled out infection, does that mean she's a tumour? And he said, come on, we'll go into her room. And he brought us into her room and he kind of, without telling us what the results were, because they needed to get the proper, you know, the proper report, he had said to me that they didn't like what they were seeing and that it was malignant and aggressive. And we were like, oh my God, that was the first we have heard that this was what was happening to her. Then this was the confirmation that we were dreading, and we just, I mean, it was just shock and are you sure? And then out of nowhere, then the consultant came down that did the biopsy, and she kind of, in fairness, like, she nearly went through the same conversation with us again, but in more detail. And she said that they were waiting on histology for the report, but that she had asked histology to take a look at it and histology had the same concerns as them and they didn't like what they were seeing. So we knew. We knew leaving Dublin that it was a tumour, it was aggressive, it was malignant.
Oh my God.
And we were only a few doors away from her being told this news and it just broke down. I remember just thinking, no, this is not going to happen. Oh, I just let it all out of my system, I think, there and then. Oh, my screams were probably heard all around Dublin that day. I just let it all out then. And when you see your husband crying as well, it's, you know, like, that this is just so not good, you know, that, like, he's not even able to hold it together for me. Like, this is heartbreaking. So with that, you know, when she was ready to go home, we were allowed to come home, and we still had to wait for this report. And then they didn't ring the day they said they'd ring. And you go to bed going, oh my God, we're still none the wiser. And then it was the following day and they rang Ollie and not me. They confirmed that it was osteosarcoma, which is a very rare type and a life-threatening type of a bone cancer. And that followed with a phone call from Dr. Michael Capra, who's the oncologist. And, you know, he was lovely. He was sorry to have to tell us this news and that he was going to be taking us on and he was going to be her consultant. And he wanted us to come up within a few days. And he went away to arrange that. And we just spent another day or two just waiting for appointments and dates. What's going to happen now? What do I do about my job? What do we do with Farrows? And all of that. It's just, there's so much that goes through your head.
What are you thinking when you're looking at Saoirse around these days? How do you get through those moments?
Back then, at the time, you look at her and you're really struggling to hold it in. You're crying and you're looking away and you're hoping that she doesn't notice. It's impossible. It is impossible to... You know, I remember coming down from Dublin the day of the biopsy. Actually, we stayed that night again because... you know, she needed to rest and it was late and, you know, she loved this hotel and we were coming home the following day and she was singing Christmas songs in the back of the car and I was crying my heart out in the front, staring out the window. And You'd give her an odd glance and a smile to say, "You okay back there?" And then you'd turn around and you're like, "Oh my God." You know, and she never noticed anything. We had just told her that everybody was trying to figure out what was wrong with her leg. So, next trip to Dublin was to meet the consultant, and he was lovely, Dr. Michael Capra. She just struck up a great relationship with him.
And was anybody reassuring you that everything was going to be okay?
We were kind of being fed information in baby steps, I think, really. You know, you're being told so much in front of Saoirse. Like, Saoirse, we spoke about tumour and we spoke about chemo. But we didn't mention cancer because we knew she knew what cancer was. Somebody had actually passed away only weeks before that in the neighbouring parish. And she had commented to me that that was really sad. So she knew what cancer was. So we didn't say that word. And then, you know, when we were comfortable to leave her with Nurse Olivia, Dr. Michael brought us into her room. And that's when we were like, right, this is where we get to find out really what's going on and get our facts and, you know, ask the serious questions. And, yeah, you know, I suppose it was all kind of like, you know, we're going to do a plan, a treatment plan, and she's going to have chemo. And, you know, it was like when you think something, you didn't want to say it out loud in case it would come true. So we were like, you know, if we say, is it cancer out loud, you know, and then we did, it was like, yeah, it is cancer. And, you know, I remember thinking, is she going to lose her hair? Yeah, she most likely will lose her hair. And I was like, oh my God, stop. Like, she's going to lose her life. She's making her communion next May. All of that was just, we just sat there sobbing through the whole conversation. And then the one question that we didn't want to ask, but Ollie asked it, was, is this going to affect her leg? You know, is there any chance that she might lose her leg from all of this? And he turned around and he said, we will have to look at that, you know, in the new year, we will talk about that in more detail, but there is a very good chance that she may have to have an amputation. It was just so much information to take in.
Mm.
But there was no guarantee about the amputation. It was just a possibility. So we had to park that at the back of our heads because we weren't going to revisit that till the new year. She had to start her chemo. So then, of course, in between, we had telling family members, which was really hard to do. And we went back up to Dublin and she had her surgery for her Freddies and commenced her chemo on the 13th of December. And she did 9 months of chemo in total. And she did lose the hair and she had horrible side effects along the way. And, you know, she strengthened towards the end and she went through hell and back.
We were on a Miriam Hussey's Soul Women Christmas party and you were telling your story, and you said something that really stuck out for me that night was that you said that you just went to bed every night and cried your eyes out. Yeah. How do you get yourself through it?
From that first night that we left Galway Hospital and they had said it's either a tumour or an infection, I'd say I cried solid for a month, and for that month I slept in bed with Saoirse. I used to, you know, we'd get her down to bed and then we'd sit and we'd talk about the serious stuff, and we'd probably console each other a lot too, because that's when we could do it when she wasn't there. And,
Yeah. You
know, that's when we would really let it out of our systems and supported each other. And then we'd go down to bed and I'd just find that I just wouldn't be able to stop crying. And my husband, Ollie, would say to me, stop now, come on, you need to go to sleep. And I wouldn't be able to, I just would not be able to stop, because you just think of the worst. You automatically do. You can't help it. And you think, am I going to lose my little girl? And why is she to go through this? And why can't I do it for her? And I never thought cancer would come to my front door twice. So the only way I could stop crying was if I crept in beside her. She'd put her arm around me and she'd say, night, Mama. And I wouldn't cry because I wouldn't let her see me crying. And I'd eventually fall asleep. And I did that for about a month. I don't know. You do what you have to do. I think you're so strong in front of her during the day. And then at night time, I think we crumbled. I remember Ollie's mom and his sister called around one evening and I didn't even speak. I wasn't able. They sat down and I was just numb. They were so upset. And I couldn't cope with that either, because I was like, I'm so upset too. And they left again. And it was just the weirdest feeling. They were going through this sadness and I was going through this sadness. Ollie wasn't even able to speak to them. It was like a grieving.
Yeah.
That life is different now and it'll never be what it was.
Mm-hmm. So the worst happened, I suppose, that Saoirse had to lose her leg. But I was listening to this interview that you did with Ryan Tuberty on his radio show, and you said that when she came out of that operation, she said, "I'm so proud of myself."
Yeah,
that must have been an incredible moment. How, like, what an amazing person she is, and how strong. And that must have been a relief for you to hear her say that.
Yeah, I think I imagine that if I was ever given such bad news or diagnosed with something like cancer, that I automatically think I would not cope, and I would be like so cross with the world and cross with everyone. But it's like when Ollie was sick, he was so positive and he kept me going. And I think Saoirse was so positive, she kept us going on this journey. And there was just this proud, you know, God, she's really got her head screwed on and I'm here struggling to keep it together. And she's thinking about this realistically, that yeah, she's right. Like, I mean, she did get rid of the get rid of her leg, which means her tumour's gone. And if she didn't, it wasn't going to be a good thing. I remember texting Ollie immediately because he had gone back to Ronald McDonald's house, and I was like, she just said this. And he was like, she's amazing. She's so amazing. And I was like, I'm so proud of her.
Even though that is such an absolutely traumatizing thing for you as a family to go through, did you feel like, you know, when the cancer is gone, that you have a bit, you can kind of breathe a little bit again, or not?
No, not for me. One of the first meetings with Dr. Michael Capra, actually it was the day, the 13th of December, when she had her surgery to put the Freddies in. We were brought into a room while she was in surgery. He sat down with us and he went through all the side effects of chemo. I sobbed the whole way through it. And he kept saying to me, do you want to take a moment? And I was like, no, you stay talk. And he talked about this could happen and that could happen, and her hearing could be affected and her heart could be affected. And I just sobbed my heart out. And I just said to him, so if she has chemo and if she has to have an amputation, does that mean she's out of the woods then? And he said, oh, she'll never be out of the woods. And that's not what I wanted to hear. And now, a year down the line, you know, she's had her cancer treatment, she's had her leg amputated, she's doing really well, but she's going to be monitored very closely for life. She's someone with childhood cancer, you know. She was 7 when she was diagnosed, she's 8 now, turning 9. I definitely would never take it for granted. Like, I can't bring myself to be like, it's great, we have her, and we always said that we'd take her even if it was without a leg. We have her, that's the main thing, and she's still our Saoirse. But of course, in the back of my mind, it's a worry I will always carry around with me, because I still carry that worry about Ollie. And it's funny actually, because it's funny how things come back to you. Farrah Rose was only 6 months when Ollie had he had a niggling pain, and he was brought into the Goy clinic and he was having tests for it. And I remember the consultant had said to us, this doctor had said to us, it's all fine, it's all okay. And I said something like, oh God, thank God, after a day of tests. I was like, thank God. I said, you just never said. He's like, you need to stop worrying now. He said, you need to stop worrying about your husband. You have a new baby, you know, you need to get on with your life. And I was like, God, yeah. And then like 5 months later, Saoirse got sick. So I never, ever stop worrying. I never, ever. Like, I think the reviews and that, you know, you relax for a while and you enjoy the moment. But then as you know they're coming up, you have this fear, you have this anticipation. You just want them to say, all's fine. Her chest is clear, or her bones are clear. And thank God. But we will have to go through that on numerous occasions going forward.
How often is she checked?
So for now, it's every 4 months.
Okay.
And then that'll go to 6 months. And then it'll go to 9, I think. So she's only had one review so far. She had done her first chemo in December. and she had come home and we were saying, look, we'll just have a nice family relaxed Christmas. But she ended up getting a really bad flu and she ended up in UHG for the whole Christmas. It was just miserable. It was Farrow's first Christmas. We were split. I was at home at Farrow's and Ollie was sleeping on the floor beside Saoirse. And she went back up to do her next chemo in January. And I just said to the doctor, you know, we talked about the amputation. And I said, you know, what's the story? Where are we at with that? Like I said, is that going to happen or is it not? And he said, undoubtedly so. And it was like I was up in Dublin on my own. You know, it was like hearing it for the first time again. It just, you know, I had to ring Ollie then and I had to tell him this is happening. So, you know, putting it to the back of our minds and hoping for the best. No, it's going to happen. She's going to lose a limb. And I struggled with that because they were hoping to have the surgery in the March and we had to accept it and get our heads around it and then explain it to Saoirse. And it was very, very hard. You know, I remember Ollie saying to me, you need to accept it now because we have to tell her. You know, there was a couple of tough moments, you know, around that time. Of course, we had the COVID year as well. And we had planned to have a healing mass for Saoirse on the 12th of March. And that day it was kind of announced that, you know, Ireland was in a pandemic. And things were starting to close and events were being cancelled and there was people coming from near and far to this healing mass and there was a lot of work put into it by close friends and community and the priest had to seek permission from the bishop to go ahead with the mass and I was like, God, I really hope it goes ahead because I really need this, you know, I really need this to get me through. But the bishop wouldn't let the mass go ahead, it was cancelled. And we were heartbroken about that. But that evening we just decided, you know, that we'd ask everybody through social media to light a candle for Saoirse at 7 o'clock in light of the events with the mass having to be cancelled. We decided to sneak down to the church anyway because we were like, the mass is cancelled, there's going to be no one down there. So we snuck down to the church to light a candle ourselves around 10 to 7. We'd met people that were leaving that hadn't heard that the mass was cancelled. And on the way home, oh my God, all the candles on the windows.
Oh my God.
There's a lot of those moments that it would just bring you to your knees. And, you know, you saw the love and the community spirit that was there. And it's like, as I often say, you're in your house and you don't realise what's going on. But sometimes it's like you have to stand outside and look in and go, that's actually my house. That's all going on under my roof. And then it hits you. And then you pull yourself together again and then you move on. You know.
So when you were driving to Dublin for the Late Late Toy Show this year, were you just thinking of what you were doing this time last year? Or what was your, how did you feel kind of, it feels like a kind of, not like a full circle moment, but it feels like a full year, everything that's happened. And here you are driving to the toy show.
You know, we were saying that the year started with Farrow's being born on the 1st of January. So how could you get any more of a high from that? You know, that was amazing. So we started the year amazingly. And we were finishing 2019 on such a low with Saoirse's diagnosis. And then, you know, she put down a really tough year. And I suppose, you know, like the highs that came out of that were, you know, the fundraising and the events that people held and to see the community spirit and the love out there. But the toy show was just magical. I feel like for me going up to the toy show before it all unfolded, what really happened on the night, it was like, what a way to finish out the year on a high. That's the way we should be doing it. It's great, you know, for her. And, you know, God, how could you get any better than Ryan Tubridy on the toy show? And isn't it amazing for her? And she'll look back in years to come and it'll be brilliant. But what unfolded on the night with, you know, the three wishes, like, you know, he got her to walk live on TV. I hadn't even told my family that she'd gotten her prosthetic a week earlier. They didn't expect to see her walking on live television. It was just amazing. And then for him to fulfill her third wish. Oh, jeez. But it wasn't even just that. It was that he then made her part of this huge announcement for the toy show appeal and the launch. And he was thanking her for giving back for her fundraising efforts during the year. And I just think how, like, there's no bigger reward that you could have given Saoirse than what he gave her for the year she'd put down. It was just, we're still reeling over it.
And I think something that I was very emotional about was hearing that you were giving the money that was left over from your GoFundMe page back to charity, which is just such an honourable thing to do and an incredible thing to do.
Saoirse will need prosthetics going forward for life, but just up until she's 18, she will need 2 to 3 prosthetics a year. And as I said to Ryan on the night of the toy show, we don't want her to be deprived. We don't want her to need something and not be able to access it. And we certainly want her to be able to reach for the stars and aim for whatever she wants to do. So that money that we raised is there, parked up for her, for when she needs it. If she decides that she wants to be a gymnast or become a professional runner, that's a separate prosthetic that has to be made separately, and the money's there for that for her. If she decides that she wants to buy an extravagant bike that'll help her do whatever, you know, for whatever needs she has. It was also for any modifications that might have been needed to do around the home, or when she's older she might want a bit more privacy in the house. So really it was to cover all of that. And we sat down with the lovely Donna in Kappa and we did the figures and we were shocked, really shocked. So we talked about it and we said, okay, this can either go one way or the other now. And we just said, let's be honest with everybody. So we wrote it in our bio, what we were doing and why we were doing it. We were very honest from the start. And she reached that goal of 160,000 in June. And we had this amazing online concert organised. We had the most amazing people, the most amazing committee. Paul was our event manager and he just did so much for us. So we arranged Saoirse's Summerfest to be held on the bank holiday Sunday. We got in amazing sponsors like Supermax and Codaline headlined. You know, we had the most amazing bands. We had Rory Stories. We had Catherine Thomas, we had A.P. McCoy came on, Ruby Walsh, and spoke, you know, and told inspirational stories. It's just amazing. It's about 9 hours long on YouTube. Wow. It was a brilliant day. But before that day ever came around, we reached our goal. So we were like, God, what will we do now? And I think it just felt like the right thing to do would be to give back to those that helped us along the way. And when I say those that helped us, I mean the charities like, you know, the Irish Cancer Society, Avian's Pink Tie, Hand in Hand West, St. John's in Crumlin, and St. Bernadette's in Galway, where Saoirse had to go in weekly for bloods, and she also stayed there on a couple of occasions. And we just thought, look at, they're the places that she was, and they minded her and they looked after her so well. So let's give them something to put into themselves and do whatever they need to do. And yeah, we didn't really think too much more of it. It just felt like the right thing to do, and we did it.
I wanted to ask you about music, because I know you're such a musical family and you've a beautiful voice yourself. Were you able to listen to music this year or sing?
That's a good question, because I don't know. I think music and me always makes me emotional anyway, and I'm a huge Christmas person. So last Christmas was just depressing, really, for want of a word. I remember no matter where we were, it was all so fresh and raw, and you'd see someone, you know, walking down the street, and I'd be, I don't know why I used to feel like this, but I used to say, oh, I just want to be that person. Do you know? I didn't even know what was going on in their life. And it could have been 20 times worse than what was going on in mine. But I'd be like, oh, I just want to be them. I just wanted to be removed from what I was in. And to see people out shopping. And we went to Liffey Valley one day to pass a few hours. And it was all for Saoirse's benefit, I suppose. And I remember Ollie saying to me since that he found it particularly hard to cope that day. He was just, you know, so upset. People singing, carol singers, music song or Christmas songs. It was very hard. And now this year, oh, I love, like we love, like I have Phil Coulter on any opportunity I get in the background. And Saoirse is like, can we put on Meghan Trainor? Can we put on such a one? But yeah, I do. I find it hard. We drove out to look at the Christmas lights the other evening and I was crying in the car because I was thinking back to last year when she was singing in the back of the car and she was none the wiser. And here we are a year later and nearly nervous to say, but we're coming out the other side.
That's really good to know, you know, because you can't suffer every day.
No.
Especially, I think, you know, as a mother, like we give every part of ourselves to our family. So I can't imagine, you know, the toll this has taken on you personally.
I felt it did take a toll. I suppose, you know, when she was going up for chemo, it would be for 3 or 4 nights at a time and it was running. When she's on chemo through the night, she's on fluids. So there's a lot of toilet breaks. She'd just sit up in the bed and she'd say, Mama, I need to go to the toilet. And I'd sit up in the bed and go, okay, one eye open, one eye closed. And that eventually caught up with me. And I used to be hardly able to get out of the bed myself and I'd be exhausted. But, you know, you keep going. It did take me a while. You know, when she finished her chemo in September, we just took that time to just get over the exhaustion. And we were conscious of that, which was really good. We didn't try to just plow on. I just knew I had to listen to my body for a while and be exhausted and recover.
Mm-hmm.
It does take its toll, emotionally, mentally, mm-hmm. physically, in every way, really.
So how is Saoirse on a day-to-day basis now? And we'll probably, you know, finish with this question. How does she feel when she wakes up in the morning? How is her spirit? Is she still a happy,
she's great,
go-lucky little girl?
Yeah, she is. Like, it was when she got sick first, I suppose, and started the chemo that when she wasn't up first thing before everyone else in the morning and she wasn't at the bottom of the bed, that's when we realised, God, this isn't right, you know, and she really is sick and your heart would just break. But now she's back to being at the bottom of the bed without even putting on her prosthetic. She'll scramble down the hall in the morning and she's like, morning. And she's like, can I go into Farrow's? And the two of them would be in the room and she'd be chatting to her in the cot and reading her stories. And it's lovely. And she is full of life. And she doesn't think back too much. The odd time when she gets me on my own, usually she'd say, you know, God, I remember this, Mama. And that was sad. And we'd talk about it and that'd be it then. But yeah, she's very happy. She's looking forward to Christmas. And those elves landed 2 nights ago. So she just can't wait to get up in the morning now to see what they're up to. So it's an earlier start for everyone, but no, it's good.
It's been an incredible honor for me to get to know you. Thank you for trusting me with your story. And I when I heard you speak at Miriam Hussey's event, I just think that you will use your voice forevermore for good. And I think that is just an incredible way to live. And you've so much to give people, and you will, you know, I think you will use your voice for all the right reasons. And, you know, I'll be praying for you all and hoping that 2021 is a little bit brighter.
Yeah. Thank you, Georgie.
So that is the end of season 7. I just wanted to say a massive thank you to Rosanna for opening her heart and speaking about a time that's been so hard for her. 2020 has really been a tough year for so many people, and I really hope 2021 is better. I really appreciate all the messages and love my listeners give me. It really means so much when I get a message to say the Good Glow has brightened up someone's day or given someone hope. Thanks for letting me keep you company on all your walks this year, or in your car, or even while you are making the dinner. It's been an absolute privilege and something I never take for granted for one single second. I'll see you next year. Thanks for listening to the Good Glow podcast, with thanks to Spotlight Oral Care. Great teeth start with Spotlight Oral Care's Sonic Toothbrush, the oral care staple. Designed with both efficiency and comfort in mind, it ensures an amazing clean as it is gentle and effective in removing plaque and discoloration, even for sensitive teeth. The 2-minute timer and high frequency brush movement, along with 3 speed settings for personalized cleaning, sensitive clean and white, will improve your long-term oral health. Check out spotlightoralcare.com for more.